Wait, wait, stop, that's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being. To be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story. And tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story, and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it. The IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not. As you may guessed it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show.
I was like, well, I want to get clean, but I don't get clean. But I don't want to live this way, but I do want to live this way. Like, I was torn. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I was still calling, obviously deep down I did, because I was still researching rehabs. So then I got the call to send me to California. And that's when I called my mom, and I was bawling. I'm like, they want to send me to California. My mom's like, okay, so. And I'm like, I'm not going to California. I'm not flying across the country. And that's when she had me on speakerphone. And my daughter, like I said, my daughter and her boyfriend are now living there still. And my son is not speaking to me at all at this point. And they're all on speaker. And they basically said, we're done with you, Amy. We are done. And they hung up on me. So now I'm crying even harder. And then another place called me back. It was in Florida. But it wasn't as, it made me feel like they were like herding cattle, you know, so to speak. Like there were so many people there. So, but I'm still going to go because Florida is a lot closer than California. So I was like, okay, so I text the girl that I was speaking to with customer service, and immediately I got a phone call from the clinical director from here where I'm at, and I start crying again, and I'm telling her my story of everything that has happened, everything that's transpired, and she's like, do you want to know the process? I'm like, yes, please explain this to me because I don't understand. Like, I do not understand what is going to happen to me. So she explains the whole entire process to me. And it's a smaller, like, you get more one-on-one attention. It's a smaller place, a smaller facility. And I liked the way it sounded. And I said, listen, I said, can you do me one favor? She said, what is that? I said, can you please get me an earlier flight? I said, my flight tomorrow is scheduled for 4 in the afternoon. I said, if you do not get me an earlier flight, I said, I am telling you right now, I am going to be getting high all day and I will not get on that plane. And she did. She got me on a plane for 11 o'clock. The only stipulation that I had told her was I need to say goodbye to my kids in the morning. And she did. She got me on a flight to LAX from Harrisburg at 11 a.m. So I had to be there 3 hours early. So I got there at 8. My parents did let me over the house in the morning. I said I wanted to say goodbye to my son that morning, but he didn't want to see me. But I did send him a text message, and I told him where I was going, and he said, "Good, I hope you come back a different person and just know I love you." Mm. And that was the first time he said he loved me mm-hmm. in a long time. And I saw my daughter that morning. She said goodbye to me. I did not see her boyfriend, but he had said goodbye to me, I think, the night before. The sad part was I had created so much damage with my parents that it was basically just like an in passing thing, and I didn't get a chance to say goodbye until I made my safety call when I landed in LAX and told them that I was there. But I did get to talk to them throughout, like my layover and stuff. So, and I'm not gonna lie, of course, I made sure that there was no drugs left, because I was so desperate for help and in such despair that I was just in this crappy hotel on Route 30, like I said, with a needle in one hand, a meth pipe in another, and a thing full of meth. And believe it or not, remember I said I didn't have, my mom only gave me money for the one night. Well, I had to stay again. Well, my ex and his friend came to visit me the night before. Well, he paid for the room again. So I saw him, and they left me a little goodie bag. So I made sure that there was nothing left, because if I was doing this, I was making sure there was nothing left. And I did. And I got there September 7 p.m., September 9th, and September 10th was my sobriety date, September 10th, 2021. So I've been clean for 94 days, 95 days now. And yeah, I have not spoken to him, my ex. I have not spoken to my plug. We went through my cell phone, me and my case manager. We deleted numbers. I made an entire new Facebook page. Everybody's cut off, and I am not going back to Pennsylvania, because I can't, if I get tied into that area, I'm so easily manipulated. I'm learning the process of not being manipulated like that. I'm learning boundaries, because that's what I don't have. That's what I especially did not have. I did not have good boundaries for myself, and I'm learning what boundaries are, what healthy boundaries are. I did not have healthy boundaries at all, ever in my life, and I'm learning what they are. And I had to set boundaries. And as even if it's the ones that I want to keep in my life, as sick as they are, I can't. And I have to learn that it's okay for me to fail. It's okay for me not to be perfect. And that's what I always wanted to, like, everything always had to be perfect. And I'm still trying to figure out why everything in my life, why I had to do everything perfect. That I don't know yet.
Does, like, that part bother, does being perfect bother you?
It doesn't bother me. It used to bother me, but it doesn't bother me anymore. But I'm just trying to figure out, like, why. But that's what me and my therapist are working on. But boundaries, I'm getting a lot better at. I'm getting a lot better at that, because there are people who have messaged me and, you know, asked me, believe it or not, asked me for money. And I'm like, no, you know, before I used to be like, oh, okay, sure. You know, that's why I don't have, like, my retirement left. No, you know, no. And I need to keep sober, healthy friends in my life. I can't be friends with people who are not sober and who aren't good for me. Let's face it. If you're not going down a straight, healthy path and not on the same page where I am, I wish you luck, but, you know, I have to be in the same mindset. Because chaos and drama is all I knew my entire life. And I don't want that anymore. I don't want that for my kids either. It's not healthy.
Yeah, thank you so much for this story.
You're welcome.
It's amazing to hear, and I'm glad that you hit rock bottom and now you have self-awareness and you are in a different place and you have made decisions for your own life. And funny thing is, as you're talking, we are very much alike in stuff, very interestingly.
Yeah.
But before I go into that, there are two books. I'm going to leave them here so I can send you the link after the call. I'm going to leave them on the table so I can remember. First one, as we talked about, it says, Codependent No More, How to Stop Controlling Others and Start Caring for Yourself by Melody Beattie. The second one is, I'm reading it, I'm getting goosebumps. It's called Dealing with the Crazy Makers in Your Life, Setting Boundaries on Unhealthy Relationships.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I'm going to have to get both of them.
Yeah, by Dr. David Hawkins. Those books I've read probably over 5 times and they have changed my life.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to get them.
Yeah, definitely. And another great thing, since you're in Cali, I don't know how they work over there, but I know in New York City, you do not have to own books or buy it. You can do audiobooks or even because it's a free app. So that option is also there if you cannot find the paperback or if you don't have money to purchase. So that's an option to have it for free. And so before I get on the question, similarities with your story is, so I have met someone who, like as you were talking with Mr. P, your ex, the similarities and how you were, and it's interesting that you did use the word trauma bond, and I had trauma bond with, I'm in my podcast about that too. I talked about it. I nicknamed that person Rilo so I can have a context with name, but I changed the name. And so I was in trauma bond, and in 10 months, I did not know why I was going back with all this drama. I was at a low point, not loving myself, doing all the bad decisions because I wanted to have approved. That person to approve my life. And the funniest thing is, another thing, similarity with you and me, I'm a perfectionist. Everyone knows it. And it does not bother me, but it bothers people because people feel like they cannot live up to, in the past, my expectations. I do not have expectation of people anymore. But people, when they tend to be with me, since I'm so perfect, for their own sake, because I never dictate that to anybody, but they look at me, they're like, I cannot live up to you because that's the way you are. But anyone new now, when they start doing that, I even, if you go on my channel, if you subscribe or watch my feed, I even wrote a song that says, people, I forget what the lyrics go like. I go like, moth beg to worship my light until they get burned and die by it. Because those people see this perfectionist person because it works for me. But then when they meet me, they get disappointed. That's how they get burned. And then they're like, oh, I thought you were but it doesn't work for them. And because of that perfectionist part. Another thing too, when I got with Rilo, we were having back and forth turmoils of like, it was kind of like playing tennis of emotions and how you were with Mr. P and Mr. B. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? And later on, I realized that it was trauma bond.
and how he was what's the thing called? I wrote a note. Let me get on the note real quick here. What is it called? He is a victim narcissist or a vulnerable narcissist, as they would describe. And we're not gonna get into deep into it, but as you notice with Mr. P, all the things they would do to keep you, they are a drug themselves.
They both still are. To my knowledge, they're not clean. Yeah.
Right. Well, for me, like, the first drug in my life was sugar. And as people need to realize and know that it's a drug. And the second drug to me was a person. It was Rilo.
Yeah.
Because how you go back to someone who is just like a drug, like the meth, they're hurting you. You're looking at you in your mirror, you feel disgusted, but you still go back to it. There's an addiction. Yes. There is this disconnect. And it's crazy. And I made a podcast. It was a podcast about Halloween. I was saying, I'm going to bear my soul out and be truthful to myself. I even said, and I said today, I'm not proud of that. If he messaged me today, I believe I would say yes. But I'm glad that we're blocked. But it's tough. And I can, as you were talking, I was getting goosebumps. I can feel you. It's like different stories, but similarities. I feel the pain.
Right. Like, I even thought too, and I even brought it up with my therapist, as much as, because my, like I said, my birthday is December 4th. And as much as I know we don't talk, we do not speak. As much as we don't speak, I was kind of like, deep down, I was like, well, you know, when his birthday passed in June, we weren't talking, but I did end up seeing him at, like, the convenience store, and I wished him a happy birthday, and I think I gave him, like, $20, too, that day for his birthday, and, but he was, as you know, he was keep coming back and forth, and, but at that point, we weren't talking, and I was kind of deep down this time, I was like, well, I hope he reaches out for my birthday, and then when my birthday passed and there was nothing, I was like, wow, okay, so deep down, I wanted it, but at the same time, I didn't.
Yes.
Because then I knew, like, oh, well, then it's going to start again, and no, I can't have that in my life.
And it's good to get rid of addiction, period. And I'm glad I brought up a human addiction, because I don't think I ever heard anyone mention that. I don't know if you ever thought of that either, because what you're stating, you started with trauma because you married this kind of people. It's funny that you say that, because I wrote it down as a question. Do you notice you are getting with men with different faces but same men? And then you mentioned that, and I was like, oh my god, like, yeah. Is our spirit got us together to talk together on this podcast? Like, what's going on? It's amazing.
I did. Like, I brought it up today too with somebody. Like, somebody posed a question. I forget what the question was, or what. Something like, what do you have a bad habit of repeating or something? And my answer was picking the wrong men. And that's what it was.
Oh, I'm glad you say that.
I always pick the wrong men. Because if you were, for lack of better word, normal, you better get away from me. Because I could not ever have normal in my life, even though I wanted normal, like, to go on the vacations, to have the happy life, to have the bank account that always had the money in it, like, not to struggle, to have that, even though I wanted that, if there was not some sort of chaos, no, forget it, I wasn't going to be with you.
I want to,
look somewhere else.
That is so true. My guru is Sadhguru, and he mentioned something like, and also Dr. Wayne Dyer. These people, if you like, I don't know what you do on your day to day, you can research about them, and they totally have changed my life because they're my gurus. Dr. Wendyer says, an orange cannot give apple juice. And so therefore, who you are around or who you attract, and words are powerful. As you mentioned, you chose, and I'm glad you have self-responsibility in that, because people tend to say, men come to my life to ruin me. But then I saw a meme that says, men can come to your life, but then you keeping them in there is your karma. And when I saw that, I floored. And I'm like, 100%.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. For sure. Because that's, you know, I always had that power to let him go. I could have let him go 1,000 times. I didn't have to bring him back. Like, my daughter even threatened me a couple times, you know, to, like, if you bring him back, you know, I'm going to leave. You know, I can't stand him. And, you know, and she had every right not to, because he was hurting her mother. But then it was almost like I was begging my daughter, like, don't start, you know, stuff like that. But she was right, and she's a kid, you know. Well, you know, she's an adult, but she's like, you know, to me, she's my kid, you know. But she had more common sense than I did.
Well,
but
I
see it now. But it took me to obviously get off drugs, hit rock bottom, finally. Whether I was on drugs or not, I still had to hit a bottom to see that this is not what I want for my life. Like, something is not working. Something has got to change in my life, because I cannot be miserable anymore. And I cannot take being hurt physically, mentally, verbally. I cannot take it anymore. Like, I am worth so much more than that.
Yeah, 100%. A wise lady I interviewed told me that most people change their lives for two things. They either were pushed against the wall and forced to do it by life, of course, or other times they wake up one day and go like, I just want to do it. And it's like, and it's like either one. It's like, it all depends who you are and what you have done in your life that turns you into the, like, life is forcing you, either homelessness or rock bottom or disease or something crazy, or you just wake up and you just want better because what you had, you're grateful for it. And, but you just kind of like, I want to use bored, but not the word bored. You just want difference, you know, and as human being, it's okay. And so your process of going through it is like perfect under the sun, because who says you what, you know? It's like, but I've noticed with you and I, with the similarities, I'm a perfectionist. I don't question that anymore. I'm just being having a balance in my life. And I also do not, Yeah, so with the similarities of then having a human addiction, and of course, because our past, we had a trauma. This is why we chose certain men. Yes. Like, I used to choose men who are, I don't know if you're familiar with that term, hobosexual.
Okay, no, I'm not familiar with that.
So it seems like with Mr. P, he could be that. You could tell me a hobosexual is someone who gets a relationship with you because you have a use. As you were mentioning, you are doing everything, but he was putting in nothing. That's a hobosexual by definition, because they start living with you right away. They're licious. They're licious. They suck your blood. You become thin, you become sick, and when you're done, they have no use for you, and they leave as he has done. And then now you are left with the disease of whatever they left on you.
That's pretty much, that's pretty much it. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was even talking to my best friend one day while I was here, and I He had tried to reach out to me. This was a while, like after I first got here, when I could, because when I first got to rehab, I couldn't have my cell phone at all. And believe it or not, after I had left with my plug had another person that he was basically, let's just say he would, you know, it is what it is. He was using her too, you know? And, he, my ex, ended up being in contact with my plugs. I call her his plaything. And my ex moved that one in right after me. So you see, yeah, exactly what you're saying. Yeah. That's what he did. So when I went into rehab, I was almost at my 30-day mark, because I was in my mind, to my non-sober mind. And as I said to you, I was so resistant to the program too at first. In the beginning, I wasn't even going to go on to the next stage of it. I was going to do my 30 and go home. I haven't. I've been here for 3 months going on 100 days, if you will, in like less than a week.
I'm very proud of you, and I'm very glad you're doing that. Please stay as much. I feel like kind of a thing. You know, sometimes when you are done and you're ready to get out because you have that 100% strength, I would implore you to actually leave when you either
I'm going to leave when I know I have that strength. So
yes,
so anyway, when I got my phone back to I was able to look at it. I had permission to look at it at this point, because they have their reasons. I understand their reasons now. And he had reached out to me. Well, that girl that he moved in, like, he kicked her out. And he was trying to, like, try and use me again. I'm like, you're joking me, right? Like,
it's called a narcissist supply.
Yeah, and that's when I told you he admitted that he was narcissistic. That's when he did admit that he was narcissistic. And I'm sitting here thinking in my head, do you realize you're narcissistic? You're being a narcissist now by telling me you're a narcissist?
Yes.
Because you're trying to tell me that you're a narcissist to be like, oh, okay.
Feel pity for you. Yeah.
Stop it. You know, like,
yeah.
And that's when me and my best friend were talking about that's what he does. And his own mom had said it, that he knows exactly what he's doing. And believe it or not, my plug did too. Where my ex was more blatant about it, and I was just too blind to see, my plug was so subtle with his narcissism. He was so subtle that I didn't see it until I got here to see what he was doing, to see what he was all about. Yeah. So each of them, like, I had something for each of them to use. And the TV world glamorizes the drug world. There's nothing glamorous about it. There's nothing glamorous about it.
TV's terrible. Stay away.
Yeah. It's disgusting. It's dirty. I tried to convince myself that I never used sex to get my drugs. Yes, I did. It may have been just with the same two people, but yes, I was.
Yes.
It was just sad that the both of them were just keeping me high to get what they wanted. Right. And deep down, I know my ex, by his verbiage and some of the things that he says, like if I made a sentence, I can't even give you an example because I don't even remember what one is, but he was like, oh, well, I guess I'm to blame for that. And I'm like, I never said you are to blame. I'm like, I'm not pointing the finger at you. I'm like, but you must, that's your own guilt. But nobody is to blame for my addiction but me. I'm the one who asked for it. I'm the one who bought it. I'm the one who did it. And honestly, whether it was this or something else, my addiction started a long time ago because I was on Adderall. So I was taking Adderall and diet and phentermine diet pills. So my amphetamine addiction started long before I even met him. So.
Right. And it's like from one, because I've noticed that too. And as I mentioned before too, when you have one little addiction, and if you're not basically is mindful and know what's going on with yourself and have self-aware, it could be easy going to one to then the other. And before you know it, you're in the hole. Because I had, it could seem minimal to a lot of people, but as I mentioned, I had an interview earlier, an addiction is an addiction. And every addiction has its own weight and value, and none can be diminished. Because with the sugar addiction, it took me 18 months to get rid of it. Even now, I had to like, I had like a craving for Oreos for weeks.
Right.
And, it was like terrible. And I know that may sound silly compared to like meth, etc.
No, it's not. Because one of our facilitators said it today. Like you said, an addiction is an addiction. It could be from bubblegum to sex. And that's the analogy he uses. An addiction is an addiction. That's exactly what it is. Like, I never looked at it. I never looked as me as an alcoholic. Well, when I was doing my timeline, because we had to do a timeline from the like the moment we were born until present day, every time I drank, whether it was 2 years in between the last drink I had to the next drink I had, every time I drank, I was drunk. I was never in it just to have an occasional glass of wine. I was in it to get drunk. Well, guess what? I'm a binge drinker, so I got a drinking problem. So I got to watch, because my next drink, if I picked it up, I'm more than likely going to get drunk, because that was my goal. And that's going to lead me back to drugs. So I can't touch anything at all. So I have to live a complete and total sober, healthy life.
Yes, a straight edge, yeah. And I was going to ask you that, and I'm glad you touched it up. Because I had a friend who had all this addiction thing, and he is smoking, but he went to vape. And he's really, like, annoyed and mad about, because he goes to AA, and he mads about the community. He says, well, I can smoke, but they look at him bad because he's doing it. And I was just like... And that could be a bad thing, because like, you shouldn't shame people, because if you're in a community, it's supposed to be about support. But I understand where he's coming from. But I never told him, because he's big and he knows and he's saying it himself. But in my head, I'm thinking, if you are smoking a pack a day, that's still an addiction that could lead to other addictions.
It's well, like, you know what? I was a heavy smoker. I was getting to be a heavy smoker when I was using, and when I got into rehab, I started smoking more, because like, okay, now I'm not using drugs. So
right,
you compensated.
What
am I going to do? Right. And believe it or not, I have not bought a pack of cigarettes, and I couldn't tell you when, and I can't tell you the last time I actually smoked a cigarette. I do have a vape, and I think I took a couple hits off of it yesterday. I haven't used it today. So I slowly cut cigarettes out of my life. But I remember saying to them, one addiction at a time. Because I was like, okay, I just cut drugs. I can't cut cigarettes right now. But I did. I ended up slowly, when I moved over to the sober living part, which I'm at now, that's when I started cutting the cigarettes out of my life, of my daily life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... Because I, if I'm going to be healthier, obviously, I didn't want to continue to smoke. So, but that was my own personal choice. Not everybody is like that.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, everyone is, there could be a structure, but everyone has to do it the way it works for them.
Mm-hmm.
And because as a perfectionist person, I can do things cold turkey and basically taking it out of my head. But at the same time, there's other things. I know two things that I battle and I need to stay away from them is the sugar and binging on Netflix. So I do my best to stay busy. Like podcast is keeping me busy doing these things.
Right.
And also having a structure, like in the morning, if I'm going to have sugar, it's going to be fruits. So I have fruits in the house because it's healthy and I'm eating the pulp. And I've noticed like, I can work out for 2 hours not eating any food and I feel awesome and I have so much great energy. But when I eat sugar, I feel like
shit. Yeah, you get sluggish. Yeah. And I remember one, and when we were, a couple of my friends that are still here, well, they have left, but one of them is still here. When we were in detox, we had a facilitator who was filling in. She was addicted to food, and one of her big things was sugar, and she has to stay away from it. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, she admitted that. And I had not seen many people who were, but she said, believe it or not, a lot of people are addicted to sugar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would say that's like maybe 90% if I'm not pushing it too high.
Yeah, right? Yeah, but there's sugar in almost everything.
Oh, so. Yeah. I had to go cold turkey healthy. I had to go on no processed food. And also everything has to be made by me in order to not eat those sugar and everything. Even in bread, I had to, like, I haven't done the bread thing because after I said it online. And so, and I, you know, when you go AA, you have to like say things and be aware of it. I was like, I'm addicted to sourdough. Sourdough is my drug at night. And I know I should not be eating past 10 p.m., but I'm doing that. And I need a self, how you call it? Not structure, but like self control.
Right.
Because it's just my brain doing that. I'm full. I don't need like eating like 3-4 slices of sourdough, that's gonna become sugar into my gut overnight, which is not good anyways.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I'm glad you have a therapist. And so do you feel confident, and is your therapist feel, you and your therapist feel confident that, since usually when you go to a therapist, you go from day one to see what the reason is why we behave certain ways. And once you find out the reason, it's easier to basically nip it in the bud, like they say. So are you guys doing that?
Yes.
Perfect.
Yes, we are. Yes. Yeah.
That's awesome.
A lot of my stuff stems back from my mom and dad got my biological father has since passed away. He passed away 19 years ago because my daughter was just born when he passed away. But when my father, now that I spoke of, when I said they hung up on me and everything, he adopted myself and my brother when I was 16 and my brother was 12. So he and my biological father and my mother divorced when I was 8 and my brother was 4 years old. And I blocked this out, but I remember it clear as day now. I witnessed my father having an affair on my mother. I just did not, and I saw it multiple times. I just did not know how to verbalize it to my mom. So, but my mom obviously found out about it because that's the reason why she got a divorce. That's one of the reasons why she left him. And obviously she wasn't going to tell an 8-year-old, that's why I'm leaving your dad. She told me when I got much older, but I blocked it out of my head. So I internalized all that and I blamed myself. And I had abandonment issues. And for a long time, I had the attitude that, well, you know what? I'm going to hurt you before you hurt me. And I would live by that and I would do that, you know? And believe it or not, I was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder because of that trauma. So we're dealing with trauma, and once I think we're going to actually look into it now for trauma support groups for that.
What is your abandonment style?
I used to. I used to not now. Now, believe it or not, I am comfortable and okay with being alone. Because I've been alone now for over, actually, it's coming up on a year, and I've been okay with it. But I used to, in the past, I would have to jump from one relationship to the next. I never gave myself a break. Mm-hmm. I always had to be with somebody. And even in my late teens, early 20s, I always had somebody on the back burner. Always. Mm-hmm. And if I felt that you were going to leave me, well, I was going to make sure that I left you first.
Yeah,
because you weren't going to leave me.
Yeah, I felt that with other people.
And if you did leave me, I was going to make your life a living hell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I even said today in the group, because addicts are one of, and especially me, I can say it for myself, I was one of the most self-centered people you would ever meet. Everything always had to be about me. And I have worked really, really hard to put that in check, because sometimes I didn't even realize that I was making it about me.
Mm-hmm.
In certain situations. I was trying to make it not about me, make my life, you know, about other people. But I am very generous and very giving. But that also got me into trouble, because that's what I did many, many, many times with my ex and with my plug. I was too generous.
Yeah.
Especially with money that I did not have. Like, if I didn't have it, I'm going to find a way to get it. And most of the time it was my parents. And then I would lie to my parents. And now I'm in debt to them. Like, majorly. So,
yeah, that's one of the, yeah, when you have the time or decided to, I'm like, flipping pages to that book, with the, like, being codependent and taking care of other people. Like, my abundance style has been, especially I've noticed it more, with Rilo last year, that I keep people in my life even when they're not good for me, because I want to prove to, I had a thing, I need to prove to myself that I'm the good guy. And if they fuck around, then it was them who did it. And I didn't, so it wasn't me. So my hands was clean. And I also was good to them, because I'm a good person, but I was good to them above and beyond so they can stay in my life. That's how they want to be abandoned. But with him, as you mentioned, with the style, he would fuck up, and then, because he's afraid that he was telling, and he was aware of that too. One thing I appreciate with me and him is that we had frank conversation. He says that his mother left him for another man when he was 5 and left his father since, and he still hates his mother since today. So he felt abandoned by his mom. So the way he does things is, when he's with somebody new, or even friendship or anything, he ruins it as a test to see if that person's going to leave them. And when they do, he says, "See, aha, I told you, you would leave me." And and because he told me that, because of my perfectionist nature and also my abandonment style of pleasing people above and beyond so they don't leave me, I made sure that I never left him till this day. And he was the one who actually had to leave. And I'm glad that happened in my life, although it was challenging. But I have grown mentally fivefold. Like, five years went up in my mentalness.
I have too, because just like you, I was a people pleaser. Like, I could have met some of the people that I used with, I could have met them like 2 hours prior, and, "Oh, you need to use the car? Go ahead." And I had no business lending out the car, because it wasn't my car to lend. It was my parents', you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I would do that all the time. And, like, I know now that I can't please everybody, and I can't take care of everybody, because you know, I, at the time, you know, I am trying to take care of myself, you know, and before, like, when I first got here, I was still so worried about everybody else. Now I could give a shit.
Yep.
It's about me, and yep. I'm going to be selfish right now, and if you don't like it, oh, well. I even told two particular people who were messaging me on Facebook, they are now since blocked, and I told them that if you are not messaging me to ask me how my recovery is going or how I am doing, then do not message me, because I don't give a shit what is going on back home. I could care less. I don't care.
Good,
I don't
good.
Care what everybody's doing. I don't care who's doing what. I don't care. If they're in jail, you know, okay, so be it. They probably belong there.
Yeah.
If they passed away, okay, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, what can I do from here?
Yeah, you need to heal yourself, and you cannot mm-hmm. afford any more drama while you're healing. It's like someone is like, you're sick, and they're telling you to go and do the dishes. Like,
yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah,
I'm in bed
exactly.
right now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And that's, you know, I don't care. And even my own daughter, at times when people have like messaged her or she saw them out, you know, she's even told them basically fuck off pretty much, or she has a whole script planned in her head. And sometimes deep down, I think she's wishing she sees some people because she wants to tell them off, you know? But at this point, you know, when I do go back for her graduation, her and I already have it planned out, because Lancaster is big, but it's small, especially in the drug world. Everybody knows everybody, and I'm bound to run into somebody. But it's either keep it moving when and if I see somebody, but if they start talking, we already have it. Well, nice talking to you, gotta go. You know, hey, how are you? Gotta go.
Yeah.
Because I'm not getting sucked back into that lifestyle. But by the time she graduates, I'm gonna have enough time under me that I'll be strong enough. But they also know, and they also respect the fact that, you know, my kids and my family, that one of the reasons why I did not come back right away is because I don't trust myself. There was a point where I told, you know, my therapist and everybody would ask, and the insurance company also wanted to know, like, how bad the cravings were. And there were times where my cravings were like an 8 out of 10. And I would tell them, like, I couldn't tell you if somebody walked in and had a bag full of meth. I can't tell you if I would take it or not. And now I could tell you if somebody walks in with a bag full of meth, I'm walking right out the door. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be near that.
Yeah,
that's at the point where I'm at right now.
That's great decisions. All my life I've been straight edge, and I've called myself that up until I went to the low point, and then when I met Rilo, and mm-hmm. because I wanted him to stay in my life. And as you were talking your story about Mr. P and mm-hmm. or those people in February when you met them, I was just like, because he kept threatening, like when he didn't get his way of certain things, he would threaten to abandon me.
Mm-hmm. First. I got that too. Yep. If you don't stop arguing with me, I'm gonna leave. I'm like, okay.
Right.
Like, what am I doing?
And then
looking
yeah.
back, sometimes I did see what I was doing, but then at the same time, I didn't realize what I was doing, or if in fact I was really doing it, because when he got out of jail, he swore he was gonna not use meth when he got out of jail, because let's face it, 2.5 weeks, he was clean. And we got into a fight that night that he got into jail. He got out of jail, he left. And I was like, well, you didn't have to pick a fight with me if you wanted to go use. You know, stupid
making
stuff like that.
Making an excuse to blame you, basically.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. I am glad that, because like when I wanted to keep Rilo in my life, I did things with him that night, and I indulged in everything that I never did in my life ever. I
right.
stayed away from all this stuff in my life, and looking at hindsight, I couldn't believe that the person that was me. But I'm not shaming myself. I'm done with the guilt and I'm done judging myself and pushing myself down, because anything that we did our best at the moment. That's right. All we can do, because the present is all we have. We cannot live in the future and the past is gone. So right. I'm just taking that as a lesson of where I was at the low point to be like, wow, obviously I love myself so much. Obviously there is so much more to work on. And obviously I need to go back into my childhood to understand why I allowed these kind of men in my life and why I went so far. Cause I was like, never, ever, like even my friends, like when they would drink, they'll be like, hey, sip on this. I'll be like, no.
Right.
But for that one person, I didn't only do the dark drinks. I did the sniffing stuff. And I was just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
For this person who did nothing ever in my life, just take and take. I couldn't believe it.
I feel you. I never thought that, because I told you that I had put my second ex-husband in rehab multiple times.
Yeah.
And I never thought that I was actually going to be on this side. I was on the other side. I was on the, you know, the family of the addicts.
Yeah. And if life that crazy, it's like you never know where you're going to end up.
Right. And I actually was like, wow. And believe it or not, when I was starting to get bad, there's always like, they always say that inner voice that you hear, you hear an inner voice and it almost sounds like you, but it's your higher power pretty much talking to you. And when I was getting bad multiple times, I heard that inner voice saying to me, you're going to rehab. You're going to rehab. And I brushed it off. And then the last time it said to me, you're going to rehab, that is when my friend introduced me to her friend and we were talking. And that was it. I was like, I can't. I'm sitting here trying to find a vein in my arms. And I'm a phlebotomist, so I should know. I've now like ruined at that point most of my veins. I'm still trying to figure it out, and I'm shooting up as I'm talking to people on the phone with rehab. Like, that is sick. My godson was born, you know, I told you my friend had her baby. My godson was born. I couldn't put the pipe down enough to not snort a line in the bathroom at the hospital. There's something wrong there. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I still didn't even see there was something wrong. It took me until Labor Day weekend to see that I had a problem. And nobody was going to convince me.
Yep.
Everybody was just praying that at some point,
you'll see
I was
it.
Going to wake up that I saw it. And I finally did.
And no one could convince me anything either. It's like, no one can. I often say, one thing I often do in my life, I never tell anyone what to do unless they ask me. I rather inspire people. I rather live my life. And if you look at my life and you'd be like, oh, I want to be like Zen. That's all you can do. Because not until you're ready.
Right. And then at that point, like you were saying, things that you know, that you're not ashamed of anymore or anything like that. The one thing that I got to stop beating myself up at, because I did not let myself, I was not in the right frame of mind, and the plug just took complete and total advantage of me. He ended up trafficking me. He ended up, he trafficked me, and I was like, no, he didn't, because I never knew what trafficked meant. I thought when people said sex traffic and human trafficking, I thought it was like, okay, you went down to like Guatemala or Brazil or something and you brought somebody back and you sold her or him on the street to like the highest bidder. That was my thinking of sex trafficking, human trafficking. And it was explained to me that it's anything where somebody profits off of it. Well, he would live stream us in sexual acts and make money off of it without my permission.
Right. Yeah.
So when I was coherent enough and, you know, lucid enough. And it took me till after rehab, or after I got here, and we were in a group, and the facilitator said one thing, and at that point, my urine test came back clean, and it took over 3 weeks for my urine test to be clear of meth, and I was already clear-headed, like, enough. It took, the facilitator said one thing, I had a breakdown because I remembered it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remembered looking at his phone or seeing the laptop, and I remembered a couple times saying, what the hell are you doing? And he made money off of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
and it wasn't just me.
Yeah.
I've
noticed, based on your story, you basically... Because you had, like, I would say childhood, or as you grew up, very different, certain types of men, etc. But things started going down based on your surroundings and the influence in your life. So can you tell us, because I know a lot of young people, I don't know how your children are, or but even growing up, I believed it. But I know a lot of young folks, they don't think people can influence them. They think they got it all together. But at the end of the day, if you're not, most of us are not that strong, and especially when you're a kid under 25, your surroundings can have great influence over you.
Yeah.
Even as an adult.
Yeah. Well, I grew up in an upper middle class family. So I always had, let's just say my parents always wanted me to have, you know, the great friends, you know, the well-to-do friends, you know, the friends who were never problematic, if you will, you know, didn't get in trouble, whatever. And wanted that for both me and my brother. And, you know, some kids do, when they're younger, do get in trouble, you know? And some kids sometimes don't have the best reputations. But I was always the type of person, well, if you're going to tell me to do something, I'm going to do the opposite. I'm going to go ahead and do it. And I gave my mother and father a run for their money. Like, I was a horrible teenager. And not getting in, like, legal trouble, but, I mean, I could have if I got caught, but I was getting myself into trouble. But I, you know, I hung out with, looking back, my parents said that they shouldn't have done what they did. But when I joined a volunteer first aid squad, so a lot of my friends, other than my high school friends, when I was 16, they were older. They were on the fire department, the first aid, or they were on the police department, because the town in New Jersey that I grew up in, Manasquan, it was tiny. It wasn't a very big town, so there were a lot of smaller surrounding towns. And when I was doing that, I was hanging out with people who were a lot older than me, like 6-7 years older than me. So I was hanging out with people who could drink. So obviously, what were they doing? They were giving me alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
So I was influenced by that. And then every year in September, they always had a firemen's convention, you know, down in Wildwood, New Jersey. That's a party weekend, I think it's a weekend. I can't really remember. It's been years since I've been there. My parents, at the age of 16, 17, let me go. Looking back at it, they said they shouldn't have let me go. Because of the people I was going out with, I was also at 17 going out with somebody who was over 20. So that's where it went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And it... Yeah, that influenced me a lot. So hanging out with the older crowd, you know.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about, how was jail?
Mm-hmm. God. Okay, well, first off, when I got pulled over and I got arrested, the sad thing was in that town, they knew me by name. And come to find out, it wasn't because I was a bad person. It's because of the people I was hanging out with. They were known. And because of the drugs, they wanted them, not me. Thank goodness. When I was arrested, I flat out admitted to the cop. I'm not going to say his name. I almost did. But I admitted to the officer. I said his first name because that's how I knew him. I said, Officer B, I have a warrant. He's like, you do? I said, yeah. He goes, hold on. Let me see if they want you. And I was sitting there. And he came back. He's like, all right, Amy, get out of the car. And I'm like, what? He's like, get out of the car. He's like, it's not taken care of. I'm like, are you kidding me? And it's Wednesday. So bench warrant court is Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So it's like 10 o'clock at night on a Wednesday. So I'm screwed now. And he puts me in handcuffs. He has to take me down to the police station. Now I have to wait for the county officer to come and get me. Would you believe they shackled me? They handcuffed and shackled me for a failure to appear warrant. I'm like, are you joking me? Like, are you serious? And mind you, I'm in flip-flops and jeans and a short-sleeve shirt and trying to walk in shackles to the police car.
Wow.
to take me to jail. So when they took me to jail, like, it's my first time ever in there. And so I'm doing all the things that, you know, answering the questions and everything. And with that, you know, they already put, when I got there, Officer B hands me a bag. So I put, I had my nose pierced at the time. And that day when I got out, I lost my nose ring. So, because I took it out. So I put my nose ring, my earrings, everything that I had on in the bag, my cell phone, everything, into property. So I hand them over my property, and it's so humiliating because now I have to strip like completely naked in front of one of the female officers just to make sure that I'm not, you know, sticking things up me to take into jail. And then I had gotten my first COVID shot because at the hospital I had to, you know, get it because I had intentions of going back to work. So I had to get my first COVID shot, and my godson had a cold, and so did my daughter and her boyfriend. So I now caught this, and it instantly, when I get colds like that, it goes into pneumonia. So I had pneumonia, so I told them I had it. So now they put me on a block in isolation because I had a cold. So now I'm in isolation by myself. So I'm alone in jail. Coming down from meth. I'm like, great. So thank goodness I had one of the coolest officers. She was nice. She let me out of my cell like all day. It's hot as hell in there because it's June. It's like 90 degrees and there's no air. So the next day, Thursday, I'm in there all day, all night by myself. Like, I'm like crying and I'm telling her my story. She's giving me like advice, and she's giving me advice on my ex and everything. And of course, I'm not here, like, I'm hearing her, and I still remember a little bit of what she told me, not all of it. I'm hearing her, but at the same time, I'm being nice, but I'm not giving a shit what she says, because at the end of the day, I'm going to get out and I'm going to do whatever the hell I want to do in my mind. So that Friday, I had court that afternoon, and of course I had one of the best judges there that day. So I'm taken down to court, and it's video court. And ironically, the guard that day who took me to video court was the officer who arrested me's brother. How ironic is that? So I tell the public defender this story. They ended up finding all my paper that I had COVID, that I sent over that I had COVID. They reinstated my bail, and I was released at 9 o'clock that night. but it was awful. It was awful coming down from that and being so anxious and jittery and wanting to get out, and nobody's putting... The first person I called was my ex, because I needed somebody to come and get me, because I am not about to call my parents. I was not about to call them at all. I wasn't. And come to find out, they did end up finding out that I was in jail, and they took the car. But here's the thing. The first thing I did, when my ex picked me up, he brought me back to his house. I saw his mom, his sister, you know, hugs, kisses, the whole nine. Took her car back to my apartment, because my purse, wallet, everything is back at my apartment. So I go there. First thing I do is take a shower, because I'm just grossed out. I get in there and I look at my purse, and my purse is in disarray. And I'm like, what the hell happened? She proceeds to tell me that, and I didn't know, because I had a warrant, even though I was handcuffed in the back of the car, that overrode his, like, me giving him permission to search my purse or the car. I didn't know that when you have a warrant like that, it overrides it. I always thought that, well, he didn't give me permission, that's why, but apparently he could search my purse. I owe him a huge apology, so I am going to make an amends with him, because I was an asshole to him, total asshole, and in my purse was everybody's pipe, everybody's container that had stuff in it. We were actually on our way to go pick up more meth. We were out, and it had, like, residue in the containers, and I was holding on to everybody's stuff.
So what hope do you have for the future?
I'm actually going to school. I got accepted to multiple colleges. I have to decide where I'm going. I'm going back to school to finish my bachelor's, and I'm going to get certified in substance abuse counseling. As well as I want to get take some classes on, you know, trafficking, human trafficking and sex trafficking, because I want to help others. I want to pay it forward. So I want to give back, because a lot of people have helped me, and I am so incredibly grateful for that. And even complete strangers. Like I said, my friend, I thought I hid everything well, and I did not hide it well, obviously. And I want to give back and help others and give people hope that even though you think you're lost and you're in such a dark place, you don't have to be. You're not alone. You don't have to feel like you're alone, because that's what I did. I felt like I was totally alone in this world, and I wasn't. I wasn't alone. I just felt that way, and I could have reached out a lot sooner than I did.
That's so true. And one thing I've noticed with the reaching out, in my experience at least, it's better and easier to reach out to complete strangers than people who know me, because I've noticed even in my entrepreneur ventures, or even if I need something, when I reach out to people who know me, which I would think, like, it would be better, but then there's so much baggage that comes with that. There's judgment. There is, like, oh my God, you're annoying me. There's, like, oh my God, I can't deal with you right now, or I have my own life. But when you talk to other strangers, I don't know what the psychology of it is, but for some reason, strangers are more receptive at supporting your business or supporting your need in something. And if you have, if you hit rock bottom, a stranger is more likely to run out and save you than people who know me. It's weird. I don't know. Maybe someone is deep into psychology listening to this. Please let us know what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I would love to know that. I would like to know too. Me too. Yeah, I've noticed that as well, that strangers are more apt to help you as well.
It's so interesting. So why was it very important for you to tell your story today? Because when I posted that thing on the other lady's post, you responded, and and she did not. So it was like really interesting because I love psychology and I love to learn like human and how and all this stuff. And I love how it's interesting because I'm like, I've noticed a lot of people I talk to, there are similarities. Like I'm spiritual and I believe in energy and how people come into our lives for reasons. And I'm doing this podcast, like Rilo happened in my life. And I went to 10 months of depression and self-loathing with him.
Right.
And then I decided to stop shaming myself and guilting myself and judging myself. So one way of therapy to do that is to have a solo podcast, which I started. And other people was like, you know, I benefit from what I'm hearing. You should interview other people who can also tell their story. That way people can feel like they're not alone.
Right,
and,
right.
And that's why I kept doing it and I'm happy I've done it. And I've noticed that I meet certain people like you in the interview I had earlier that had like, of course we're different people, but it's kind of the core of it is similar, but different stories. And why it's kind of like, yeah, people enter to your life for a reason. And it's like,
right.
I don't know what that is, but I love it. It's like, feels good.
Right. I wanted to get my story out for basically also what you're saying is I want to let people know that they're not alone. And especially when I started, even though, yes, my drug use goes back to when, you know, being on Adderall, even though I was prescribed it, I was also over-prescribed it. So that started my amphetamine use. But when I dipped into the meth, I started it at an older, if you will, age where people started much younger. So I want to let people know that they're not alone in the world with meth use. And if they want to get help, there is help out there. And the place where I'm at is absolutely great. And people, you know, they can private message me if they want. I can let them know where I am. And if they know somebody or they themselves want help, I can give them definitely the phone number. But yes, they're not alone. And two, it's important to let people know that this stuff out in the world that my plug had done to me and, you know, where people feel alone with domestic violence, please do tell, because don't hide it like I did. Even though I did try to get help and the police were absolutely no help. So when it continued, I felt ashamed or made excuses. I mean, I came up with like a million excuses where the bruises came from. Don't get out while you can. If you can, and I understand why people can't, and I understand why they don't leave, you know, it's not as easy as it sounds or as the situation is, because statistically, the hardest part and the most, as they say, the day that can be the deadliest day is when you are leaving. And I remember walking out that door, running to my plug's car because I had him park in a specific spot, praying he did not see me leave. Because I knew if he saw me, that was it. And I remember telling you my last words to him were, next time you better kill me.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. So nobody's alone in this. Mm-hmm. So just reach out to anybody or let somebody know, even if you can't leave, let somebody know what's going on so that even if you have to like call that person on your cell phone and hide the call and just let that person hear what's going on and they can call 911 for you, do it.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
And if you cannot reach out to someone close to you, reach out to a stranger. And exactly. That's how you and I met. We met on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're able to do that. And I tell people, I left my parents' house when I was 19 and a half. And if I, And of course, I was thinking like I couldn't do it. I made a podcast about how I attempted suicide 3 times. I thought that was my way out. And I failed 3 times. And I was going to run away without them knowing. And my guidance counselor told me, it's better to save some money and be on your own because you can do it. You don't have to take the extreme way out, which people do. Their extreme way out could be those things that I tried, or it can also be staying with that person because they feel that they need that person or they cannot do it themselves, which is a lie we tell ourselves. Because I was, as you were doing that lie with you, with him, mm-hmm. and I was doing mm-hmm. that lie with Rilo as well, like, oh, I cannot live without you. Like, no, you before you met them, you were living just fine. So it's a lie we tell ourselves because you're addicted to that person or that situation. And if you're listening to this, know that it's based off fear and it's a lie and you are capable and you are possible. And if you need to reach out to someone, if you listen to this, you can reach out to any of us for resources or talking. Or reach out to, there's Facebook groups. Facebook is, I know a lot of people are bitching about Facebook and all this stuff, but I feel like there is the internet or life is what you make of it. If Facebook annoys you for a certain reason, you can use it for other resources.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Like the sobriety resources. You can just be on there and use that instead of for other means. And so there are people like, there are people out there who cares. And especially with you, you say you're going to school and give back forward. And that's an amazing thing. It's like, it's like you don't have to, but you do. And you're passionate about that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to finish it. I'm putting my mind to it. And yes, absolutely, I'm going to finish it.
That's amazing.
For sure.
Thank you so much, Amy, for your
story. You're welcome.
And
you're welcome.
I don't have any more questions. Is there anything lastly you'd like to say before we go?
No, that's it. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you got the time, you can watch because there's stories like yours. There's stories about people without addiction, but who went through religious trauma and other life stuff.
Sure.
So you can watch those and be on the know. But I also will let you know when it's aired, etc.
Sure, no problem. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you. Thank you. And if you need to chat and still connected, you're welcome to do so, definitely.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, have a good one.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.